It makes my job incredibly easy to have a good contracting company. And I've said this from the first day that, we got our contracting license, because Shine started as a software-only company. We thought we were just going to do the solar billing. And then on our first project that we did the solar billing for, we hired a terrible contractor that ghosted us mid-project.
What's better than earning money from a 9-to-5 job? It's earning money while you sleep, which is made possible if you start investing. You're listening to the Real Estate Investing Demystified with your very own dynamic duo, Ava Benesaki and August Binias. Tune in as we discuss everything real estate, both on the passive and active sides. We feature life-changing stories of today's real estate leaders that will help build your own roadmap to success. This is a show that will lead you to a diversified portfolio, a much bigger revenue, and a next level venture that brings you a smooth cash flow. Let's get this episode started. Welcome to Real Estate Investing Demystified, our second show of the day.
That's right. You always have to, you're very transparent. I love your transparency. That's why you're very good with investors, because we want to make this look like this show took days and weeks to prepare and we planned for it. And all you say, we did two shows today. So it seems like
a quick outfit change. Here we are again.
You did do an outfit change, but if you can't see it, your beautiful hair is covering your outfit. So the show is very interesting today. So I am a very free market capitalist guy. I'm a Milton Friedman type of guy. Not everything that he sees, but mostly that I think free market would prevail about anything. My background, I come from Iran, and which is a country that you not only don't have economic freedom, you don't have any other types of freedom, either social freedom or political freedom. So I love that idea. And that's why after living in Canada for a long time, I made my move to the US and I brought my wife with me and I had both of my sons born here in the US because I really believe in that idea, in that Jeffersonian kind of libertarian type of idea of the United States and the free market that exists. Now, I lived in Canada. I lived in the most liberal province of Canada, British Columbia, and I lived in the second most liberal city within that province, which is Vancouver. The most liberal city is Victoria. So I saw levels of bureaucracy that existed in different levels of government that kind of screwed things over for business people and everybody else. And one of those items was things related to efficiency and environment when it came to gas pipelines, but in the construction industry as well. So I'm very familiar with that. So our guest today is somewhat in that space in renewable energy, I believe it's called, but he's had an incredible journey. So we're going to be discussing that with him. But again, I'm coming this from a lens of somebody who's anti anyone who tries to push these ideas about, hey, we're doing this because of global warming, come and invest in this idea, or hey, put these panels on your house because it'll save the environment. Not that I don't care about the environment. I just feel that they've been taken hostage the way that my country, Iran, was taken hostage by the mullahs and the Islamic priests. And I hate any type of these shows of trying to take control of people's lives and what have you. So anyways, why don't we give a background to our audience about our guests and we can start the show.
I would love to. Amazing. All right. Today we are joined by Owen Barrett. He is a clean tech entrepreneur and founder of Shine, a turnkey solution, solar solution for multifamily real estate. He previously led $60 million in energy projects at Fortune 100 company, built and scaled an eight-figure energy efficiency company, and later focused on decarbonizing apartment buildings through ZNE Capital. Today, his mission is focused on scaling real-world climate impact by deploying existing clean technologies faster across real estate. So welcome to the show, Owen. We're excited to get into things with you today.
Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
One quick thing before that I got to also mention. I also married a woman from the most conservative province in Canada, which is Alberta yourself.
Yep. So that's right.
Yeah, that's just going, I had to include that there. But yeah, Owen, why don't we start with ZNE Capital, the word capital. So it sounds like private equity and investment firm, but you're not in that space anymore, I don't believe. Start there, please, and tell us about your journey.
Yes, the whole story with ZNE is kind of what led us to Shine. I just sold a company, niche energy services company in California. I had some capital I wanted to invest in. I got attracted to multifamily syndications. I noticed that most operators don't have a clue when it comes to energy, which I thought was really fascinating. You know, everybody's obsessed with renovating units and driving rent that way, but nobody was interested in cutting expenses. They are now because the environment's changed. But in like 2018, nobody was thinking that way. And so I wanted to show that When done correctly, on-site solar was accretive to multifamily syndications. So if you had your, or multifamily investments, if you had your, you know, traditional project level return of 18% and you do solar the right way, you could actually increase that 200, 300 basis points to 20, 21%. And so that was the premise with Z&E, was that if we buy these multifamily properties, if we combine on-site solar with the more traditional value add strategies, we could squeeze out higher returns for our investors than just a traditional value add strategy. And that's exactly how it played out for 650 units across the Midwest.
And what are those units now? Have you wrapped it up and divested them? Or you still own them? Okay. Yeah. And when it came to, so give us a quick overview of how the business model worked. I'm guessing you didn't go to a third party that you guys would install. You would have a contractor install these solar panels on your properties. Did a selected properties would be accepted that would match having these solars depending on the roof pitch or other means? Was there a certain criteria of properties that you could put these?
So yeah, we partnered with a multifamily operator to run everything real estate because we recognize we're not real estate people. We don't know how to do that. We're clean technology and finance people. So we know how to do that. At the time, we targeted what's called a master metered property. So it's an apartment property that's kind of built like a hotel. You may have 250 units, but you have one or two electric meters. And we did that specifically because that was really easy to install solar on. It's a lot easier to install solar on a property with two electric meters than a 250 unit property with 250 electric meters. We self-performed the solar. So we installed it ourselves because, again, that's what we know how to do. And our partners ran the real estate side. And our projects, because of the on-site solar, had higher returns than they would without it.
Could you measure that?
Yeah. So that's a great thing about energy, right? It's so easy to quantify. If you're offsetting common area consumption, you have an electric bill pre-solar and post-solar. If you're installing solar onto tenant meters, you have no solar income pre-solar, and then you have solar income post-solar. So part of the reason that I like energy, the reason that I've always been drawn to it, is because it's not a gray area. It's math. It either makes sense or it doesn't. It's easy to quantify in Excel. It's easy to drive decisions from a quantitative perspective. And that's the big reason that I've been like so obsessed with energy, is because it is so quantifiable.
I did some research before the show, and Redfin actually states that homes with solar panels increase the cost, the value of the home by 4%. So when you go to the market.
Yeah,
so
I think that's average too nationwide. I think it's higher in places like California and New England and lower in places with cheaper electricity. But yeah, I mean, generally, again, it all depends if it's done right. If it's done right, it's generally accretive. If it's done wrong, then, you know, you get horror stories.
Yeah. No, the reason I asked that is because you guys haven't divested those 600 units yet, but I'm wondering if you got a higher sale price as a result of having that, or maybe higher valuation when you did go to your clients. Now, having this idea of solar panels becoming very common, even Elon Musk getting involved in solar panels and with his tile roof business model, which I'm not sure if it quieted down for a while, it picked up again. I'm not sure where he is with that, but it wasn't as expansive as many of his other initiatives. When I personally drive through cities and markets in the Sun Belt, if it's San Antonio, if it was Phoenix earlier on in CPI's beginnings, if it's other markets, I rarely see solar panels on apartment communities. Is it just a cost prohibitiveness? Is it just because the education is not there? Is there other reasons? Why isn't it as common if it's a simple math and you have proved it in those 600 units that you owned?
Yeah. So the main reason is something called the split incentive problem. So if you put yourself in the position of the owner, you, the owner, have to pay for solar onto tenant units, and tenants benefit. And no capitalist is going to do that, right? You're not going to pay $1 million so that your 100 tenants can each save $100 a month. Doesn't make any sense. That's why we had to develop the software that we developed, which helps owners monetize the energy that's going to the tenants. So when you have your average 250 unit apartment building, if you want to install solar, you're actually installing 250 small solar systems, each one into an apartment unit. And then you need software to monitor those 250 systems and to bill 250 tenants for how much energy they're using from the on-site solar. And unless you have an automated way to do that, then you're stuck incentive problem where the owner is expected to pay for solar and the tenants are going to benefit, and that's never going to work.
Okay, let's visualize that. I think that's the foundation of your business right there, what you just said, right? Yeah, so let's visualize that. You have a 100-unit apartment community on, let's say, 5 buildings, 20 units per building. You want to measure how much electricity you're providing to each unit. So your firm has created a software to do so. But I think there is a hardware functionality as well between the power that panel is producing and the wiring and the software that measures it. But there's got to be another component there that fractionalizes it between each unit and sends you the information into your software.
And that's what your company developed, right? Because you guys were going after those hotel-like communities where there was one meter. And then you're like, hey, this isn't going to work. And you contacted the companies to say, hey, we need to create some sort of a technology that can individually meter each unit. And then your company actually had to create it yourself, right?
You guys, because they wouldn't offer that.
Yeah, exactly.
Offer that, right. So yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah. So, the nice thing about our business model is the way that apartments are built kind of solved a lot of problems for us. So the best use case for us is like a two-story garden style property. And in a two-story garden style property, we offset about 40% of the electricity at every apartment unit. So each unit is going to continue to use electricity from the grid. It's just going to have its electricity decreased by about 40% thanks to the on-site solar. So what our software does is it just measures, you have your resident, say in California, San Diego Gas and Electric is a utility. Residents still have their utility accounts, the San Diego Gas and Electric, but their bills are decreased from the on-site solar. Our software measures that decrease and then sends them a bill every month. And then that money goes to the owner. So now the owner is paying $1 million for solar, but they're collecting $45 per unit per month from each resident to justify that $1 million CapEx spend.
Oh, they're collecting the savings.
Yeah. Well, they're billing the savings back to the tenant.
Back to the tenant and so keeping it for themselves.
Yeah, of course. And is it a better rate or they're selling it to the tenant at the same rate as the energy company?
So that's ultimately up to the property owner. Generally, we see like a 5 to 10% discount on electricity rates from solar compared to the grid. Owners are open to, you know, increasing that discount, but they're generally profit motivated. So the higher they apply that discount, the less money that they get, they, the owner.
Got it. And when you talked about CapEx, so we understand how capital expenditure, if it's renovations, if it's, for example, washer dryers, if you're spending $500,000 on washer dryers, and that results in your NOI increasing, NOI relative to the exit cap rate, you might make $1 million from that increase in NOI relative to the $500,000 you spent. As your firm does the math on, hey, this is the cost on the panels you're going to be putting in the software, and then this is going to be your increase in NOI, and relative to your exit cap, you're actually going to make a higher valuation. You're going to increase the value of the property.
Yeah, so on a per unit basis, costs about $4,200 to install solar. That generally creates about $672 in NOI. So if you put a 6 cap on that, it's $11,200. So you're spending $4,200 to create $11,200 in value.
Nice.
It's over a 3x return on cost.
Got it. And your clients, are they financing these as a financing option? What's the interest on financing, or are they buying it cash out? What works better? What is your recommendation?
Our recommendation is always to pay for it with cash if you're well capitalized, because then you don't have to deal with another lender. We do have some groups that finance it, and that's mainly just because they're trying to avoid the upfront costs. They don't want to deal with the maintenance of these systems. When you finance it, the bulk of the benefit goes to the lender. It's the way it is. So if groups are trying to capture the majority of the benefit, then they have to be well capitalized and have some cash to put into the project. And if they don't, they can finance it, and then they get about 25% of the benefit.
And when you do, because like I said, because initially we started a conversation that a lot of apartment communities don't have solar panels. So there is a learning curve that exists for current investors and owners. And prior to the show, you mentioned that is changing. But because of that, when you come and see somebody who owns, let's say, 100 units in 5 different buildings, is there an option to start basically in one building first to see how that increase in NOI exist and then to scale? Or is it, does it make more sense to do all buildings at the same time?
In theory, that exists. We don't deal with that. We deal with more institutional groups. You know, we're dealing with two of the five largest multifamily owners in the US, publicly traded REITs. So they're not talking about piloting one building. They're talking about doing 25 properties at a time. So you could pilot it. You're going to yield the same results that you would if you did the whole property at once. They're just going to be smaller. I mean, solar is not a new technology. Solar's been around since the 70s. It works. There's no questions. Electricity rates are going up. There's no question there either. Like, the economics of solar are good today, and they're only going to get better thanks to the rising electricity rates that we're seeing across the country.
And yeah, partnering with those institutional groups, it will help you, I guess, reach your goal of decarbonizing 200 apartment units, 200,000 apartment units.
200,000.
200,000 apartment units by 2030. So I just wanted to...
Yeah. We're well past 200.
Yeah, of course. 200,000. There you go. Perfect.
I had an important question, but lost track of my thought. But all right. So is there a maintenance cost for your services, or is it install it, set it, forget it? Is out.
There's a little bit of a maintenance in that example that I gave earlier, where on a per unit basis, it created about $672 in NOI. The maintenance, the ongoing maintenance per year is about $50 per unit. So it's pretty insignificant relative to the NOI that's being created. It's not mandatory. It's a good idea. Most of the maintenance issues that we see in solar are just due to no one's monitoring the system. So when a component fails, nobody knows that it fails, and then it's offline for a long time, as opposed to if you have a company monitoring the system and something goes down and then it's flagged, we can roll a truck out to the site and replace that component, and then you avoid that downtime. It's usually pretty easy issues to troubleshoot.
Sure. Follow up on that. So if the solar and your equipment fails, the tenant can still buy the deficit in energy from their initial energy supplier, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And there's no storage on any of this. It's not storing anything. It's just supplying it direct.
We're starting to look at some storage in California. In order for storage to make economic sense, there has to be an arbitrage play. So what I mean by that is, like, in California, on-peak electricity, maybe 50 cents per unit, and off-peak, like midnight to 8 a.m., is 8 cents. So if you can charge your battery during off-peak when it's 8 cents and then discharge it when it's on-peak at 50 cents, you're arbitraging that 42 cents, and that's how you make the numbers work. Most states in the country don't have that big discrepancy between on-peak and off-peak. So storage, it's hard to get it to pencil.
Well, that was the biggest pitch, one of the big pitches of Elon Musk with his solar roof tiles, right?
I don't think the roof tiles had storage.
The storage is downstairs in the garage, the main place.
Yeah, the power wall.
Goes back in there. And that was one of the pitch. They're saying that you can sell it back to the grid. All right. Any questions before I switch the conversation, Ava? Because I think I took most of your questions.
Okay, wonderful. Owen, can you give us a crash course on ESG and how can business for profit be layered in it to try to save the planet?
This is actually a personal point of contention for me. I actually think that energy, the E, should be stripped from the S and the G, the social and the governance. S and G is a lot of gray area. It's like, feel good. Maybe we should do it. I don't live in that world. I don't like that world. I think it makes my E world look bad. So I would actually say that I think we as an industry need to separate E from S and G, because E is just, again, math. It's dollars and cents. Projects make sense or they don't. S and G is more of a nuanced world. I don't know if that answers your question, but...
No, but you must encounter it a lot, right? It's like, if I was a founder of your company, that would be a strategy we'd be utilizing to say, hey, you know, not only you are going to be saving money here, it also helps with saving the planet, because... I mean, in some of the courses we've taken when it comes to investor relations, they talk about that people don't want to just invest in companies and just for profit. They want to also do something or help someone. So we're thinking about starting a foundation. It's investment purpose ideas. But we going back to the core of kind of a free market, we feel that things got to financially make sense, and then they will trickle down, and people will, the right minds and the doing the right thing will prevail, and they will help the environment. Who wants the poles to the ice in the polar caps to melt and the sea levels to rise and all the animals dying and what we leave for our children and grandchildren not to be what we had. If I had a booked call with you and you were getting on a call to sell me this idea on my apartments for solar, I would just prepare myself that you're going to be pulling that out. But it seems like that's not an angle you use at all.
Not really, because it doesn't drive decisions, right? People don't make decisions because polar bears have more ice to live on, or, you know, we're going to stop deforestation in the Amazon. They make decisions because it makes them more money. And if those decisions come with positive environmental externalities, then that's great. And that's what keeps me going. But I think if I were to lead with environmental metrics to an institutional real estate group, I would get laughed out of the room. So we have the data that, you know, if someone asks us, what's the environmental impact of this project? We can calculate that in seconds. But in my 12 years of being in this industry, I've honestly never once gotten an environmental question. They're all financial questions, because that's how every organization makes decisions, even if they have an ESG department.
Right. Mm. Yeah, how's it going to make more profit?
Interesting. You just talk about your company. Is it still in startup phase, or are you past that phase? You've gone from being a partnering with an owner, implementing these solar panels, creating actually the software to utilize them, talking about large institutions, large REITs in the US. Where are you at within that journey? What are some hurdles that you face currently? What would make this company, I'm guessing it's Shine, right? What would allow this company to become a powerhouse when it comes to energy across the US?
I think from a revenue perspective, we're more of a growth stage company than a startup. I think from tenacity perspective, we're more of a startup. And I never want to lose that. I've worked in big companies. I've worked with big companies. I see how slow and bureaucratic they can get. We always want to stay hungry and nimble. I think that's just a core kind of corporate culture for us. But we're growing at an incredible rate. We did $500,000 in 2023. We did $5 million in 2024. We did $18 million in 2025. We're probably going to do $75 to $100 million in 2026. We're getting traction. For us, it's just getting the word out. Every time we have a conversation with a real estate owner, it's the first time they've ever heard what we're pitching. As you mentioned, kind of pre-recording, like, the real estate industry is not one to adopt new things quickly. It's a slow-moving industry, very risk-averse. So we're getting incredible traction. But I think for us to become a powerhouse in this industry, we just need to execute, because good execution leads to word of mouth. It leads to just positive references. And that's what we're all about. We're about executing well on the projects that we have in front of us and kind of using that to snowball into just bigger momentum, more customers.
Nice.
Now, I mean, when it comes to particularly multifamily value add investors, finding different ways to increase NOI, you know, everybody's trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat to have more ways to increase NOI, if it's through selling Wi-Fi back, or when we look at apartments in our markets, we always look at inefficiencies or what they're not utilizing, if it's covered parking, if it's selling Wi-Fi, as I mentioned, if it's valet trash, there's all these different ways. I'm just shocked and surprised when the Sun Belt is such a vast area that solar is not becoming one of those value add options that you can actually sell to your investors as an investment firm as well. So have you been involved in that side, and kind of before a firm buys a community, saying, hey, listen, on your future projects, this can be part of your value add strategy to get more investors and get your investors comfortable with your business plan?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing it all the time. We're working with a couple groups that are developing projects in Nevada. So we're plugging into like the development process, which is great. We're doing a lot of projects in Texas. Coincidentally, you know, going back to free markets, Texas has regulated energy markets and deregulated energy markets. And as a free market guy, you would probably expect the deregulated markets to have lower prices, right? But they're like 2 to 3 times higher than the regulated markets, which doesn't make any sense.
Why is that?
It's because they're investor owned, and investors drive profits and figure out like different ways to kind of squeeze ratepayers. So you have regulated markets like Austin Energy, San Antonio is regulated. And then you have deregulated markets like CenterPoint in Houston and Encore in DFW. CenterPoint and Encore are 2 to 3 times more expensive than Austin Energy in San Antonio. So it's just kind of interesting how you think you understand free markets and support it, but in reality, you get the opposite result, which is always kind of surprising to me. So, you know, we have to work in the areas where the utilities haven't put their finger on the scales too much. In Arizona, both utilities in Phoenix are kind of manipulating the market. So it's hard to get solar to work, even though there's a ton of sun. In other markets, it's closer to free market mechanics. It's not quite there. But in those instances, projects tend to pencil better. So, well, like I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that the thing that we have to remember is that utilities are at play here too. And utilities inherently hate solar because it's disruptive to their business model. So they're doing everything that they can to prevent solar from being adopted. So it's just kind of a messy space at the end of the day.
Fair enough. Let's talk about solar panels themselves, the physical solar panels. You talked about solar panels that have been around for a long time. Obviously, when things technology related are around for a long time, they become more efficient, they become less costly, they produce more energy. You can see that with batteries and electric cars and many other technologies that exist, computers and so on. What has evolved in the world of solar panels over this time since their creation?
I think over the last 10 years, the cost of solar panels have decreased 90%. The cost curve has decreased kind of asymptotically, meaning that the decreases that you're seeing year over year are not as big as they used to be. The opposite is true for storage, though. We are seeing large drops year over year for storage because it's a newer technology. It's not quite as mature. I think what we see kind of year over year in solar is just incremental improvements in efficiency. So you get more power out of the same panel. Prices are not decreasing that much. In fact, they're going up a little bit because of tariffs. But with storage, we are seeing, you know, pretty big leaps year to year from a pricing perspective and a technology perspective.
What's the lifespan of a solar panel?
They're guaranteed to produce power for 25 years. They'll produce power far longer. Because of that, most of their equipment warranties are 25 years.
And maintenance, bird poop, other things, hail.
So yeah, maintenance is not as big of an issue as a lot of people think it is. You can have certain parts of the country where soiling is an issue. So you get a lot of pollen or you get a lot of dust, and that will affect the output. And you have to, you know, wash the panels a couple times a year. But in the vast majority of the country, you don't have to touch your systems. You don't have to do any maintenance. You should monitor it to make sure that no components are failing. But maintenance is not a very big issue.
Got it. So let's talk about, prior to the show, in preparation of the show, we did some research on solar panels. And I personally heard about the bad side, if you want to talk about solar panels and how these just putting in solar panels and the word scam, all of these different things came up. And so what are these groups out there are doing? They're targeting older families, they're targeting certain demographics of people, and they're basically have these very aggressive and very skilled salespeople that go to people's homes, knock on the door, and their pitch is very simple. Hey, your bill is $200 a month for your electricity. We'll come in, we'll put panels on top of your roof at no cost. You just pay us a monthly fee of $150. That's a $50 delta, and you'll own the panel. And
because of a government grant.
Oh, no, the government grant is actually the real scam, where they said that this is completely paid for by the government, and then that company went and fired that person. So let's just take that out. Let's take the full scam out of it.
Okay.
Let's just talk about aggressive sales. And let's say the common complaint was that the contract was like a 40-page contract, but they only showed one page, and these poor people signed it and what have you. These companies are huge. They're making insane amounts of money. They have very aggressive salespeople.
The salespeople are making a couple $1 million a year.
Yeah, they said some salespeople are making over $1 million a year. Yeah. What happens is, that's what their pitch is. We'll come and install your solar panels, taking the scam government initiatives out of it. They're just saying, we install the solar panels. You're paying $200 a month for your energy. It'll cost you $150 with us, and you keep the solar panels. It comes with a house. You can sell it. But the way that these companies make money is that, number one, they get financing, and there is obviously interest that's being paid. Yeah. So most of those payments they pay over the next 20, 30 years is going towards interest. And then these people, they just act as a middleman. They buy these panels and the hardware from other companies, and they just put a huge premium on it. And they basically, they push it on these would-be people. Obviously, that's something that has come up in your business. That's part of your business. You're a pretty laconic guy and you straight shooter. So has that affected your business? Is that more on the residential side, not on the commercial side? Give us kind of your view of what I just described.
I am definitely in agreement that there's a lot of solar salespeople out there. I don't want to say I like it because I think that makes me feel or that makes me sound like a terrible person. It makes my job incredibly easy to have a good contracting company. And I've said this from the first day that, you know, we got our contracting license, because Shine started as a software only company. We thought we were just going to do the solar billing. And then on our first project that we did the solar billing for, we hired a terrible contractor that ghosted us mid-project. And that's when we decided, all right, like if we're going to do this, if we're going to try and convince the multifamily industry to adopt solar, we have to be the contractor, because so often it's the contractor that's leaving these terrible tastes in people's mouth. And so I would say, you know, it's super important to read agreements. A big part of the reason that we push our customers to pay for cash, if they have cash, or pay with cash instead of financing, is because you don't have to deal with these solar lenders that oftentimes are shady. But I think the silver lining to all of this in our company is that if we just do what we say, we answer the phone, we answer emails, we show up on time, we do projects on schedule, on budget, we're suddenly in the 0.1% of solar contractors in the country. It's a very low bar to hit. And so I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I like to see the optimism in things. And so it's terrible that people have taken advantage of elderly folks and probably people that don't speak English, and the list goes on and on. But from a business perspective, it leaves an incredible opportunity to carve out a niche as just being like a trustworthy contractor that supports itself on word of mouth instead of like paid media.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Salespeople are a very important part of a company. Are your salespeople as important as these other companies' salespeople? Is that an important part of Shine, your sales team?
My salespeople are incredibly important. They don't know very much about solar. They're all real estate people. Because again, we're not selling solar to multifamily. We're selling value add. And if you don't understand real estate, you can't sell that.
Yeah, do any of them make over $1 million? Because I was looking for a part-time gig, actually. I know real estate pretty good, though.
Yeah. One of our salespeople is on track to make millions in commission.
All right. Follow up to that. Let me ask you something. That with CPI, our firm here, aside from multifamily value add, we also develop purpose-built rental communities built to rent. The new up-and-coming asset class under the commercial real estate umbrella really falls under multifamily, but we're developing a 35 duplex rental community in San Antonio, and the Helotes market is just about to go vertical over the next few months. Does panels and your business model work on build to rent? Have you ever done build to rent before? Talk to us about that.
It works incredibly well for build to rent. Generally, from the build to rent communities that we've seen, it's like townhomes. It's a lot of townhomes. So there's a lot of roof area relative to energy consumption. So it works really well. We haven't done specifically a build-to-rent community. We have done a couple townhome communities, but I'm curious to get your perspective as a free market guy. What do you think about the SAVES Act? Because they're basically axing build-to-rent, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it hasn't passed yet. I don't think it will. I think the real estate guys have a huge lobby in the U.S. I am for, even as a total free market guy, I am for not allowing institutions to buy scattered single family homes, because they're competing with hardworking Americans and they're increasing prices in that way. And there is counter arguments against what I'm saying, and I don't agree with those counter arguments, but I don't think multi-billion dollar firms like Invitation Homes, who's the largest single family scattered home owner in the US, which is an offshoot of Blackstone. Blackstone got into the business post GFC and went out there and bought thousands of homes, partnered with Invitation Homes, ended up buying 75,000 homes, took Invitation Homes public, and then exited that deal and made a lot of money for their investors. So Invitation Homes currently is the largest single family owner in the US. So if Invitation Homes wants to come to a market and they find inefficiencies and they're buying homes there, they're going to push up prices against hardworking Americans who want to buy a home in that market. So I'm against that, but I'm not against BTR. BTR is a function where it creates housing supply, because we build purpose-built rental communities, we bring it online and we sell it to an institution. You know, at some point they might be available. There are some restrictions, and there are initially for the other two bills that came out, one from Trump's administration and one from the Democrats, there was a carve out for BTR, But this new bill has some BTL functionality that if you own over 350 homes, then so we have to still figure out that we have to let the dust settle. I don't think it will pass because build to rent itself, it creates supply. So I'm a lot of supply.
I'm the same way. I was surprised to see it in that, but I'm an advocate of build to rent too. But yeah, solar's a great, it's great for build to rent. You know, the thing, the interesting societal impact that we often overlook, but it's so important is if you're building, I think you said purpose-built communities, is that what you call them?
Purpose-built rental communities, yeah. BTR, purpose-built rental communities, kind of.
We're doing a couple projects right now in Florida, Florida Power and Light, and electricity prices increased between last year and this year over 10%. That's not like a blip. That's the new norm. You're going to see double-digit electricity growth in South Florida for who knows how long. So if you're trying to do purpose-built rentals, I think a really interesting idea is when you install solar, you take that inflationary burden of rising electricity prices off of your residents because now you control the electricity. You can increase it 2% a year or 0% a year. We don't factor that into our pro formas when we start talking to customers and potential customers, but it's such a powerful story that like compounds over time. And it's just whenever I hear people talk about like purpose built or impact driven real estate, I think that's got to be a really important part of the conversation because I think utilities are the second biggest expense after rent, where it's like rent, groceries, utilities, or rent, utilities, groceries. But those are the top three for most people.
Oh, forgive me. The purpose part is not kind of purpose to help people. The purpose is they are meant for rental only.
Got it.
Yeah. Sorry.
Different kind of purpose.
Yeah, different kind of purpose. Yeah. There's no giving back over here. We're just here for money. We just want to make as much money as possible.
You can make a lot of money and do the right thing. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive.
Absolutely. That's why we got Ava here, who not only makes me look good while I talk a lot, but she's also make sure that we are very scrupulous. All right. Since we brought up Build to Rent, we brought up our Apollo Oaks project in Helotes, named after our second born. Is there a cost saving if you guys get involved while we're building, before the roof goes on, before the tile goes on, before the trusses go in? Or
there's not huge cost savings, but what you can avoid is penetrating a brand new roof membrane. So if we put in the racking directly into the rafters, and then the roofing company comes and puts the paper on after the racking is installed, and then they put the tiles over, and then we put the modules onto the existing racking, you're maintaining that brand new roof membrane, as opposed to if you put your whole new roof on and then we come in and retrofit, we have to penetrate that roof membrane. We do waterproof it, so there's no issues. But some people, when they're doing new construction, they get a little skittish about poking holes in a brand new roof.
Sure. So you basically reduce potential maintenance costs in the future for the roof. And are you active in all? So let's say San Antonio, are you active there? Do you have crews there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're nationwide.
Nationwide. Okay.
Okay, great. Awesome. I mean, we could talk all day, as you can see. I can talk all day about this stuff. Making money, solar panels, saving money. Saving money is making money. All right, let's
save
do this.
Planet.
So no, I'm just shocked. If people are like these syndicators that come out and like, oh my God, we're gonna sell Wi-Fi back and that's gonna cost us $85,000, but that's gonna get us $250,000 in value in this $20 million property. Like, all right, dude, make $100,000 extra, like whoop-de-doo. Then over here, you can put solar panels, increase the value of the property, pitch that to your investors, make money while you're selling back. Is there a reason why only 40% of their energy can be created through the solar panel? Why not more? Can future technology do more?
It's a result of like available roof area relative to how much electricity apartments use. So like in a build-to-rent, if you do like two-story townhomes, you can usually offset 100%. But as you go more vertical and you start stacking units on top of each other, but you have the same roof area, it's just harder to go above that 40%.
So a duplex would be perfect. Duplex has the highest,
duplex is perfect.
The most square feet when it comes to roof. And there are two levels, but they're duplex side by side. So, okay, great. Let's get to the second segment of the show.
Okay, let's do this. Okay, so it's the 10 championship rounds to financial freedom. We're going to ask you 10 questions, rapid fire. Are you ready, Owen?
I'm ready.
First question, who's been the most influential person in your life?
Probably an angel investor that did not invest in my company.
Wow, that's a great story.
They convinced me to quit my full-time job and go full in entrepreneurship.
I heard this story actually when I was watching him on a podcast.
Oh yeah, I want to hear it.
I was very, go ahead, please tell the story.
Yeah, I was pitching it. So at the time I had this idea, you know, you have parking garages and their lights are on 24/7 and they're usually like those linear fluorescent lights. And so I had this idea to swap them all to LED and put in lighting controls. It's like a 1 year payback. I was trying to create this company and I pitched this guy for an angel investment and he said, well, what are you doing to survive day to day? And I was like, I've got this cushy corporate job that I do from 8 to 5. And then I work on this at night. And he just looked at me in the eyes and he's like, I don't invest in part-time entrepreneurs. And I was like, wow, it's cold, but it's honest. So then that ultimately is a big part of the reason that I quit that job a couple weeks later. And then I went back to him and said, hey, Bill, I quit. I'm all in. And he's like, that's great. I'm still not investing.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. I was like, wow. He's like, it's not really for me, right?
It's not for me, but
then he went all in.
He convinced me to go all in. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he went all in. Here you are today. Amazing. All right, Owen. Second question is, what is the number one book you would recommend?
I really like, it's called Start Something That Matters. It's by the guy that started Tom's Shoes. And his point is like, you know, when you start a company, if you're buying rental communities, you have an opportunity to put some purpose, there's that word again, into your company. Whatever your interests are, I'm interested in environmentalism. So I've created a company around that. I've always thought real estate, you know, it's so easy. You could put in different amenities, daycare, things like that, that would really help your community out. You can still make money off of it. So it's just this idea that like, as a business owner, you have opportunities to have impact that W-2 employees don't, but it's got to start with that like foundational question about what are you interested in and what do you want to have impact in?
Awesome. Okay. Next question is, if you had the opportunity to travel back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Buy Bitcoin.
Bitcoin's being brought up a lot.
At how much?
Yeah, how much?
How much?
Exactly.
No, I was talking to a friend of mine. He's like, it's not about, I bought Bitcoin when it was super cheap. It was like a few $100s, but it's not about buying it. Bitcoin cheap. You got to hold it after.
You got to hold
it. Going all the way up to 20K, coming back to $3,000, and then rallying all the way up to $120,000 and going back to 60. Like it's an impossibility. I mean,
yeah, I agree. Even if you bought it when it was less than $1, you would have sold it. How could you not sell it?
Yeah,
when it
closed up to not?
Even like $100, you're probably selling.
100%. Oh my God. Okay. Next question is, what's the best investment you've ever made?
A single family home of all things. My first single family home doubled in value in 2 years.
Nice.
It was just, so it was dumb luck, you know, just timing. Skill had nothing to do with it. I got in right before the COVID pop and just the $500,000 house instantly became worth $1 million.
Nice.
That's the best investment tens of millions of people have made, which is that generations of Canadians and Americans have made, is their primary residence, buying their primary residence worth in California, New York, see Alberta and Ontario. I mean, we're talking about their biggest investment was buying their home in the 80s for 20, 30, 40 grand. And that same home being worth easily over $1 million. I mean, that beats the S&P. So
you were
not alone.
Absolutely. Now, Owen, what's the worst investment you've ever made? And what lessons did you learn?
The multifamily property.
Oh, yeah?
Easily. Yeah. I mean, again, it's timing, right? In, I don't know, whatever, 2020, like the bad news had not arrived yet. Like people were not expecting rates to go up as fast as they did, or as fast as they actually did. People weren't expecting taxes to go up as fast as they actually did. Like in Texas, that's where our property was. So, man, timing and luck. I don't care what anybody says. You can be as prepared as humanly possible, but if you hit bad timing or bad luck, there's nothing that preparation can do. And that's kind of one of the situations that we were in, unfortunately.
It happens.
Yeah, it does. All right, Owen, next question is, how much would you need in the bank to retire today? What's your number?
Oh man, that's a good question. Probably 10 million cash, like fully liquid 10 million. I think I could be comfortable on that. Because I have a lot of things already, like a lot of, you know, I have houses and cars and things. Like I don't need to buy big ticket items. So like living off 7-8% interest on 10 million is pretty nice annual salary.
Absolutely.
The DPI gives 15 to 20 if you're ever.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right. Great. 15 to 20 on 10 million is even better.
Awesome. Next question is, if you could have dinner with someone dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, it's got to be Elon Musk. That guy is just like Elon Musk or Steve Jobs, like two most legendary entrepreneurs ever.
That would be a great dinner. Awesome.
Or both of them at the same time.
That would be even better.
Just make sure Ghislaine Maxwell is not there.
Yeah. I'll do my best.
Find her way somehow in that meeting somehow. And Epstein back there is like, hey, man, I got Shine now. I'm going to blackmail them. So you got to watch out for that.
All right. Next question, Owen. If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what would you be doing now?
I was a rock climbing guide for a long time. And, you know, it doesn't pay as well as what I'm doing now, but you get to be outside every day. You're super active. You're in the best shape of your life. I think I'd be a guide, whitewater rafting, climbing, or skiing.
Amazing. Yes. That's awesome, man.
Skiing.
Skiing, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Ski is life, I say. That's fun. All right. Next question is book smarts or street smarts?
Street smart, 100%.
Those salespeople making over $1 million, they're all street smarts, man.
That's right.
They're not book smarts.
I think, closing deals. I think if you can't apply, I attribute like street smart to being applying knowledge like in real time. So for me, if you can have all the book smarts that possible, but if you don't know how to apply that stuff to life when you need to, then it's probably not going to go very far.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, love
usually
that.
Street smarts guys are more pressure tested as well. So they know how to deal with, you know, adversity.
They take a little bit more risk too, right?
For sure.
So usually high risk, high reward, you know. Last question, Owen. If you had $1 million in cash and you had to make one investment today, what would it be?
I'd give it to you guys, obviously.
Oh,
15 to 20%.
You're so sweet.
Aside from that, what would you do?
I feel like I've been so risky in my investing and professional career, which has paid off mostly good for me. But I think just having like a safer investment, like, you know, I went to finance school and for a long time until I was like 40, I had no money in the stock market. It was just in alternative investments. So I might put it in the stock market just to like balance out that portfolio.
All right.
Just don't pull it out. Just got to stay there for 30, 40 years at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because those swings are pretty bad. All right. Yes,
that's right. All right. Owen, just let everybody know what's the best way that they can reach you, please.
Probably on LinkedIn. Owen Barrett on LinkedIn, CEO of Shine. That's really the only social media platform that I'm on these days.
What's the website of the company?
GetShine.com.
GetShine.com. Nice.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for answering a lot of hard-hitting questions. And we really got a crash course on commercial real estate, solar panels.
Yeah, can increase your property's value.
Absolutely. And increase your returns.
Love it.
Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. We hope this conversation enlightened you on how to win big in this highly profitable and risk-averse space. Get on your feet and embrace this world that offers so many opportunities just waiting for you out there. Continue your journey to becoming a savvy real estate expert by subscribing to the show at cpicapital.ca. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and share with your friends. See you on the next one.